Welcome to the Valley College Connection, where John Kawai and Scott Wigand, two Valley professors, engage in a conversation about success with educators and students. Each week, they'll sit down with a different guest to find out ways each of us have had to plan, persevere, and overcome to where we are now. The show will also highlight resources and services that are working to make a difference at Valley College.
We are joined today by Dr. Cowan, professor in emergency services and program director for EMT in the County of LA. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Dr. Cowan.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Let's start off with some of your background in terms of really what we want to get to is how you got to working at Los Angeles Valley College. But if you could take it further back, let us know what your educational path was like. What type of student were you? How did you get interested in the fields that you're interested in? And as far back as you'd like to go is always good to hear.
Well, it will be my pleasure. I'll go back to when I was 10 years old living in Culver City, playing with my dog Candy out in front. And the ground began shaking. And I knew in a heartbeat and in an instant that a train had struck something. We lived on Berryman Avenue in the city of Culver City. My dad was a police officer for Culver City. And so I started running as fast as I could. Once I secured the dog in the house, I ran down Berryman Avenue, where we lived, all the way to Culver Boulevard, as fast as I could go. And I had a stitch in my side. It hurt so bad. But when I got down there, what I expected was exactly what I saw. A car was underneath a train. There were bodies all over the place. I was 10 years old, and I was scared to death. I didn't know what to do. I watched everybody screaming out of control, and I said to myself, and I still remember this, and it's been a long time ago, I need to learn the skills to know what to do in an emergency because I don't know what to do, and I want my daddy. That's what I thought. A few minutes later, sirens started coming, and I watched Culver City Fire Department show up, big, huge firefighters in outfitted with big black boots, and they came out. And then a brown ambulance, a City of Los Angeles ambulance, came first. And I was struck by the professionalism at the time. One lady was screaming, and I heard him snap his fingers and say, "Take it easy, lady. We're going to take care of everything, one thing at a time." I felt very calm listening to that. When it was all over and there were people killed, of course, and the coroner came, I stood and watched the whole thing that Saturday morning in 1955. And I walked away wondering how I was going to get to be one of those ambulance guys and have the skills necessary to be calm in a time like that. Little did I know that 8 years later, when I was 18, working my way through college, I would find myself working on an ambulance. And that's exactly what happened. I started at Santa Monica City College, just like Valley College, a two-year college. And I was living and working in Malibu. That's the only place that an 18-year-old could get a job working on an ambulance in that county area. So I worked for 2 years as an ambulance attendant and driver out in the Malibu area, handling horrific calls, cars off Malibu Canyon Road, Topanga Canyon wrecks, motorcycle crashes. And I got very good at what I did. I'm still nervous on those first few calls. I was, you know, shaking and wondered if I would ever really even be able to do this. So as I graduated from Santa Monica College.
Let me rewind you just a little bit.
Yeah.
So what kind of conversation did you have with your father after you talked about the first accident? I guess the other question I have is, why do you think you became a person that when there was danger or when there was a crisis, that you were a person who was naturally inclined to run to it and not away from it?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I talked to my father about it, and he said, you can do anything you want. You can go on the fire department. You can be a physician. You can do anything you want. But just, you know, put your mind to it and go for it. And that's what I did. I wanted to be that ambulance driver who was so confident. And the accident itself was quite horrific. And I thought about it for days, literally probably weeks. I thought about the accident and what I would have done if I would have known what to do. Remember, I was 10 years old at the time. So I went, you know, I followed through. I took a first aid course, probably the youngest person ever to take a first aid course at about 11 or 12 years old. And then there was no such thing as CPR then, of course. That didn't come along until much, much later. But I did finish college at Santa Monica College, and I transferred to what was then known as San Fernando Valley State College. A year later, it became California State University at Northridge, where I matriculated through there with a bachelor's degree in speech and communication, and followed that with a master's degree in education with a specialization in counseling and guidance. Having had that at the same time in 1967, I applied to those brown ambulances that I saw, known as the City Receiving Hospital in Los Angeles. You had to be 21. And the day I turned 21, I applied. And it was an elite organization and handled all the emergencies back then under what was known as the Receiving Hospital, Los Angeles Receiving Hospital System. And they were brown ambulances. They were affectionately called brown bombers because they were sleek brown Dodges in those days. And those guys, everyone would say those guys are like doctors. Everyone would say they're like doctors. They're so good. Well, I wanted to be one of them. So I applied. And I don't know how I did it, because I remember going to Hollywood High School and taking the exam with thousands of people. And I scored number 6. How did I do it? I don't know. Maybe it was my education and background. And then I took an interview. And so out of all those people, I was hired. So I went ahead and accepted the job. And it was an 8-hour day shift. I was assigned to the Venice division. They worked out of police stations at the time. So I worked out of Venice police station. And I worked with the old timers who really were like doctors. Unfortunately, when you were a new guy like me, they didn't even talk to you. There was a real pecking order back then. But that's a whole new, another story.
Let me ask this. So when you went to SMCC, what was your license, or what was your degree allowing you to do in comparison to what your CSUN and then your master's allowed you to do?
Well, I had a degree in communications, and my goal was to get a bachelor's degree. I didn't even know if I would get a master's degree. And Santa Monica was a launching pad, just like Valley College is. And it's like a springboard where you can spring into anything you want. And I sprung from Santa Monica to Valley College, which changed its name. And then I had a bachelor's and a master's. So what am I going to do with that? Well, I think it was those two reasons that I got the job for the city, because in those days, that was pretty highly educated, and I was able to secure this city job.
Oh, so there wasn't an EMT license like there is now, or a board test that you had to pass?
That was in 1970 when the EMT book came out and EMTs were first certified. That was 1970. This, I'm talking about 1967. So it was long. One could argue that I've seen the birth, the adolescence, the growth, and the adulthood of our emergency medical services system in Los Angeles, and for that matter, the country.
So when you walk into your job then with a bachelor's, how do you know how to do all the medical stuff?
Well, I did also, when I was 16, get a job at a hospital in the emergency room, and I was able to, and I swept floors and cleaned walls and cleaned dirty trays, but I also had the opportunity to watch the physicians sew people up and do minor surgeries. And that's what was really exciting. It made cleaning walls and cleaning floors and mopping a pleasure, because I got to do what I really liked to see. At that point, after working for the city, I went ahead and in 1967 through 70, I worked for the receiving hospital system. And then the system changed and I began working for the Los Angeles Fire Department. 1970, July 1 was an amazing day for me. It's when I started with the Los Angeles Fire Department and went through their training. They still didn't have any paramedics, actually. They just were fiddling around. Paramedic system really started in Ireland, came to Florida, and around 1969 or 70 began in Los Angeles. I became certified as a paramedic in 1974, and I have maintained my license since that time.
So what was the fire department training like?
Well, the fire department training was, they actually had me doing the training. They put me at a drill tower in the 1970s because I was one of the few medical people they had at the time, had come from central receiving, and they knew that I had a very strong medical background. So they actually assigned me to the training division. And I trained EMT. They weren't called EMTs then. They were just ambulance drivers and attendants. And I trained them in with other folks with me. You know, there was a captain, and I was an actual peer instructor. And I trained EMTs for the fire department at their drill tower academy. That's what all firefighters go through. So that was very exciting. But it didn't take the place of working in the field setting. And in 74, when I became a paramedic, I worked a lot of different stations. I was at the bottom of the totem pole for seniority. So I went to paramedic training for about 6 or 7 months, then did my my internship at Los Angeles County USC Medical Center and got to deliver a bunch of babies with a gynecologist and an obstetrician standing next to me, got to put tubes down people's throats. And it's what I had longed to learn to do. Now I was actually doing it and also teaching it. So I did, I worked on the fire department for 32 years and ended with having every rank in the Emergency Medical Services Bureau, including proudly telling you that I was the paramedic chief for the whole city of Los Angeles for about 12 or 14 years. I was the commander of the Bureau of Emergency Medical Services in charge of all EMTs and paramedics for the city of Los Angeles. That's my background on the fire department. It was exciting. It was amazing. It was a career that I now help other people get into. And I know the pathway to success. And that's my job at Valley College, is to make people successful. I exist for no other reason at the college but to make people successful. Now,
well, let me ask you some, let me get some detail on each one of these roles, because it's really fascinating.
Okay.
So what was your life as a EMT driver, and how does that change when you became in the fire department, and then also as a paramedic, and then as in that administration? Take me through those sort of transitions that you had to make and what responsibilities you had.
Well, it started out with not EMT or paramedic, but ambulance driver and ambulance attendant. Those were the only two classifications. You were a driver or an attendant. I started out as a driver, and I was the youngest person in the history of the city of LA to be promoted to ambulance attendant at the age of 23. Most of the attendants, if you look back at the system, most of the, there were doctors on ambulances up until the 50s. And then when the World War II occurred, all the doctors went to war, and the drivers of those doctors became attendants, and then they hired drivers. So I was hired as an ambulance driver, and it was a promotional position. And after 2 years, you could take the test. Well, most of the people taking the test were in their 40s and 50s. They were very experienced. I took it at the age of 22 or 23, as I recall. And I scored very, very high. I think I was in the top five. And so I got promoted to ambulance attendant. In those days, ambulance attendants were in charge of the ambulance, in charge of the driver, and responsible and full authority over all patients. So that was a big deal for me. I suddenly was the youngest one. And I'll tell you, the older people on the job did not like it. They resented me terribly for being so young and have promoted so high. And some of them would drive 80 and 90 miles an hour to scare me. Some would not talk. I mean, it was a tough time to be promoted. You'd think it would be a happy occasion, but it wasn't. So then paramedics came along, and in 1974, I was selected to go for training. I did my training at both Harbor UCLA Medical Center and LA County USC Medical Center as a specialty in emergency medicine. And I became a paramedic and assigned. My first place that I went to was in South Central Los Angeles to Fire Station 22 at Vernon in Maine. It's no longer there, of course. And for about 2 years, I worked there, and I saw the gamut, a myriad of different kinds of calls, traffic accidents, shootings, stabbings, cuttings, suicides, traffic accidents, heart attacks. I mean, there is no end to what plane crashes, everything. So I did that for till 1985, and I promoted in 1985. I mean, the life of a paramedic, you'll soon be reading my book that's coming out next year.
Oh, wonderful.
Other different story. That'll be called Paramedic Chief, Extraordinary Stories from the Streets of Los Angeles. And it is completed and with a publisher. But just to jump back into the subject, being a paramedic is one of the most exciting things I have ever done in my life and the most dangerous. You're rocketing through traffic, red light and siren, people making left turns in front of you, very dangerous. So you learn to curb that anxiety and you transform it into energy. And then I was promoted to the assistant bureau commander of EMS in 1985. And then when the current paramedic chief left, there were tests given by the city of LA, and I took that test. That's when I was promoted to the chief's position. So I think I was at the right place at the right time, the right reason, and everything just gelled. And for the next 12 years, I was the paramedic chief and set policy and procedures. I was on at least 23 committees that the County of Los Angeles had, multidisciplinary task forces, chair of the California State Firefighters Association, and so many different the commission, EMS commission meetings that I attended and was part of, and pre-hospital care policy committees for the county. So I was very, very busy. It took its toll on me, and I retired in 1998 as a deputy chief for the Los Angeles Fire Department, which is just above the fire chief.
Then how did you find LA Valley College?
It found me, interestingly enough. I'll bring up a name of a guy that you all know who called me one day. His name is Ronnie Reese. He was my across the street neighbor. And I love Ron. And Ron called me and he says, "Hey, can I give your number to the chair of the emergency services department here?" And I said, "Sure, why?" And because I was in private practice at that time as a chiropractor, which I did along the way. And so I'm doing this chiropractic and I had my own office and everything was going well. I was retired from the fire department. And this guy calls me from the emergency service department and said, "Hey, Ronnie Reese gave me your name. Would you like to teach here?" And I said, I hadn't thought about it, but, you know, I'm a licensed teacher. He says, "Well, can you come and meet with me?" And so I did. And I said, "When does it start?" And he goes, "Monday."
So, that's how I got hired too.
And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know a thing about anything. Little did I know that 2 years later, I would be voted in as department chair for the next 15 years. But that's a whole other story. My colleagues voted me in at that time. And so that's how I got to the college. I got the call and I went, and I've been there for at least 22 years that I can remember. I think I started in 2000 or 2001. And it's been a godsend to me. It's to watch when they say teachers cannot see the future. That is an incorrect statement. Teachers can walk students right into the future.
Yeah, I remember I shared a room with a ex-police officer, and you know, what was going on in his class and what was going on in my class, two completely different things. I mean, the kids were early for his class. Everyone showed up. They were excited. You know, they take my math class so they can be in your class. That's the really reason why they want to be at Valley College.
That's funny. That is funny. I can see that in my vision right now.
Yeah, I remember asking, I'm like, where were you guys last week? And he said, we created a casino. And we were teaching them how to detect illegal casinos illegal games. And he goes, what were you doing? Like, well, I taught fractions.
Oh, that is great. What a story.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So let's talk about students who are interested now in becoming a police officer or EMT or firefighter. What are sort of the pathways for them to join these, and how does Valley College help them?
And let me interject one question to that, or part of that too. Dr. Cowan, if you can kind of help frame the scope of different programs that fall under emergency services at Valley College. You know, you, having been the chair for so long there prior to retiring, you have such a good sense of all those different pathways. So any elaboration would be great.
Well, at the time when I changed a lot of stuff around as the chair, and we opened up new avenues. We were teaching both administration of justice falls under emergency services, fire technology, emergency medical technology is under fire technology. We also had homeland security at one time, and we had parole and probation, which we still offer a course in for those that want to work in the jails, as an example, or parole agents, we offered that. So there was a various elements that we offered, not only just fire and medical and administration of justice, but others. But now it's pretty much just administration of justice and fire technology. That's due to budget cuts, unfortunately.
Now, what do you do with administration of justice?
Well, we have core classes, and also we literally get people ready to go and become police officers, highway patrol, deputy sheriffs, and many of them come back in uniform, talk to the class. So we have a set of classes that lead to an AA degree. Fire technology is an AS degree, associate in science, and our administration of justice also used to be called police science. That's an old term. We prepare students to become LAPD officers. We even have a program called a POP program that's being articulated right now that will go into effect this coming fall semester for younger people that are interested in becoming law enforcement officers.
So by younger people, what age are you talking about?
Well, they can start in high school, start taking courses. We teach also at high schools. We do it for fire tech, and we also do it for administration of justice. And students in their senior year generally are able to take courses, and these are college courses taught by our personnel at their high school for credit, and leading toward a degree when they get into the college. So they can take, for instance, Fire Tech 201, which is Introduction to the Fire Service, or they can take Administration Justice 1, Introduction to Law Enforcement. And thereby, they start younger, and they're better prepared when they get to Valley College. We want to target them to come to Valley College so that they can continue taking those core courses and become law enforcement officers.
So in terms of administration of justice, what are the type of topics that you cover?
We cover narcotics and vice. We cover patrol procedures. We cover law. There are courses that criminal law and what's a crime, what's a tort, all the different sorts of types of crimes, history of law enforcement. So, you know, there are a myriad of courses, but five of the courses which are strictly core courses. So you need the core courses. There are five of them, plus, you know, the biology and the sciences and the math and other things to get an AA, an AA degree. But you can also, there are certificate programs also where you don't need to take, some students don't want to take all the other courses. We think it's a good idea. The object is to get a bachelor's degree in political science or in administration of justice, also noted at some colleges as criminal law. But we do teach criminal law as well. That's part of the curriculum at Valley College.
So what is the difference between going to the police academy or the sheriff's academy with an AA or with a BS or with just a high school degree? Is there a difference?
I think there is. And that is when they do your interview, those people, I mean, we strive for higher education. So those people with a bachelor's degree or an AA degree that come in with a CV, a curriculum vitae or resume, if you will, and it shows that they've gone to Valley College and taken the core classes or have an AA degree are going to do better, we believe, than those that have no degree at all and just apply without, you know, people that have taken courses can say, look what I've done so far. Here's my transcripts. Here's a copy of my resume. And they do far better. Plus, we talk about interviews in our classes, how to take an interview, what are anticipated questions, eye contact, how to answer questions, and be able to think quickly on your feet. And so those are the things we also teach in all of our classes that help students in order to get selected for the position they're seeking.
So is it correct that you can't become a detective without a bachelor's?
The trend in Los Angeles, that's interesting you would say that. That is taking place as we speak. To be a sergeant, they want you to have a bachelor's degree. To be a lieutenant or higher, they want a master's degree now. And I think it's wonderful that education is starting to play a role so that those individuals that want to promote up are educated and both in sociology and all of the things that are needed, because a police officer in today's world has to be a counselor, has to be practically a marriage counselor in some cases, and know the law, but also know how to deal effectively and professionally with people with respect.
Then what? How if we do this, the sort of the same overview for fire tech? What kind of topics do you cover, and what are the advantages of having your AA and BS before going to the academy?
Again, one of the things you have to have to be a firefighter in the state of California now is an EMT certificate. So that's why we're so loaded with people. It's required because today's fire department ought to be called an EMS department. I often joke about it and say they ought to change the name fire department to office or department of emergency services, because most, over 90%, something like 94% of the calls that fire departments roll on are medical calls, not fire calls. Fire department has done a fabulous job in fire prevention, so we're having less fires, not so with wildfires, but I'm talking about structural fires in the cities and metropolitan departments. They've done a great job in fire prevention. And so medical calls are what are driving fire departments today. That's why they're hiring paramedics and EMTs. You have to be an EMT and you have to pass the national registry of EMT. I will tell you something. This last semester during COVID, we were on campus, as you probably are aware, respiratory therapy, nursing and emergency medical technology were on campus face to face. And our department set up the regulations on what we had, the masks and the 6 feet and all of that. We played a major role in allowing us, the district allowed us to come back to Valley College first, because we put together a program to keep people safe. And so I can tell you this, this is a fact. Of the 26 people as of today, and I checked this morning, As of today, the 26 people that took the National Registry examination for on our class this last semester, 25 of the 26 passed the examination.
Wow, that's fantastic.
That is, wow. It's unbelievable. It's the highest we've ever had. And even during the pandemic, COVID-19, we were able to do that. They were able to get their ride-alongs done. Of course, they were able to get their vaccines because they're first responders. They all had to get that. So it's probably the most exciting career anyone will ever find is being an EMT. I always say that it is the one class on campus that after one course of study, which lasts 16 weeks, about 4 months, you can go out and make between $50,000 and $70,000 a year to start working on an ambulance.
That's incredible. I don't think people are aware of sort of what that trajectory looks like. So just to summarize that point there, it's a 16-week course. It's the EMT course. Upon completion of that, then the students are prepared to take the National Registry examination.
That's correct. And they take it. We stress taking it as quickly as possible. Don't go on vacation. Don't wait. People forget 10% a month. That includes me and you and everybody. If we don't stay with things, 10% a month is lost. So if 2 months later, if you lost 20% of your memory of what you've learned, no good. So we tell them, take that. The minute you pass all your skills in our class and you learn the didactic information, then take that National Registry within a week or two, no more than that. And it pays off because we have about a 98 or 99% pass rate right now.
Yeah. One of my students, he was a teen father, and he came to Valley College after high school, and he was supporting his family. And what he did was he took the EMT job so he could get that enough money to be able to support his family while he continued taking classes. And it was just the fastest way to get a good career. That's not where he wanted to end, but that was like his first step at Valley College.
Then he can get on the springboard and do whatever he wants, but he's not alone. We have so many students in our class. We had to cut our numbers down to start. We begin our classes with 40 because we need spacing in the class and everything. But I will tell you, there's no getting around it. We have an attrition rate that's quite high. It's almost 50% because this is not an easy course. It is a life-saving course of study in which you must be able to critically think, including vital signs, blood pressure, pulse, respiration. You have to make decisions quickly. EMTs of today's world are allowed to give medication, drugs, and solutions. Nobody knows that. But EMTs now in the field can give naloxone hydrochloride, which is that wonder drug for opiates called Narcan. They're allowed to inject epinephrine, and they're allowed to do bronchodilators for respiratory things. There are medications that they can give that we teach them how to do everything, including injections. So they're able to give injections for vaccines now, EMTs. So it's when I say that, I say it in light of the fact that it is not a simple class. You have to be dedicated. If you don't keep up with your reading and don't do your reading and comprehension, and we know very quickly if someone's lagging behind. And unfortunately, this is a class of life-saving. And so if we do require an 80% on the midterm and an 80% on the final in order to remain, and get certified so you can take the National Registry. So when we start with 40 people, sometimes we graduate 20, sometimes 30, sometimes 35 on a good year. But each semester, students don't realize what they're getting into in this class. It's not a simple class where you can sit in a class like some classes and just vegetate in there, and through osmosis, all this information and learning of skills is going to go into your cerebral cortex. It does not happen that way. You have to study and dedicate. And I talk about this the first day and the first week. You have to dedicate yourself and involve yourself 110%, 100% of the time in becoming an EMT, studying and reading every single day, at least 2 hours. So it is not a simple class. It's an 8-unit class with lab. And you may have to be adept at CPR. They have to be adept at giving oxygen and knowing when and how much and by what method. And they need to know how to put hair traction splints on for fractures of the femur. And they know how to bandage. And they learn how to put oropharyngeal airways down people's throats. And they learn life-saving stuff that most people have no clue about how to do it.
Yeah. Is this a good step if you're curious about becoming a nurse?
Well, a lot of our students are waiting to get into nursing school and they apply as an EMT. And I speak to every single student and they said that the EMT course made nursing school not simple, but much more palatable. And they were much more ready to be prepared to handle it. And in fact, we go over anatomy, physiology, neurology. It's unbelievable, the human body. We go over lifespan development, shock, diabetes, respiratory problems, management of airway, obstructions of the airway, neurological problems, pharmacology. Again, not as simple, there's a lot to do. But those students that are intent on being successful, like I say the first day, we're going to do our part. We're going to present this information. We're going to be there to help you. We're going to spoon feed you if you need it, but you have to do your part. You have to read the chapters, understand, and we discuss them the next day, and then we do skills. So it's not easy, but it is so rewarding. If you could see the faces on the students that come back that are working on ambulances, and they come every semester, they come back in hordes, and they're wearing a uniform and a badge, and they come in all puffed up like a puffer fish. And I always say, talk to the class. You got the floor. And they'll tell their story. And it pumps everybody up so high. They all want to be that person.
Sure. So let me change directions a little bit. So in terms of prep for the fire department, what are the ceilings you hit if you don't have an AA or a bachelor's?
Well, the first ceiling you hit is you need to have an EMT. So that gets them into our class. And our class will teach the ability to critically think. Because if you can't do it, this is probably not the job for you. It's not, I don't call it a job anyway. I call it a way of life. But the ceilings they will hit is not being able to get an EMT or have poor study habits. I find poor study habits are something that is every department in math, in you name it, zoology, biology, they have to have skills of being able to comprehend reading and comprehension. And if they don't have that, there's a ceiling they're going to bang into right there. The other thing is being on time. They have to show up. You know, some students just don't show up. They'll just take in our class. If you have three absences, that's it. On the fourth absence, the likelihood is, unless it's a really, if someone died in the family or something like that, that's a different issue. But if they just don't show up and they skip a couple of quizzes, they're cooked. They're done. And they know that the first day. Our syllabus is very clear. One of the best syllabuses around. I know Lori Nalepa used my syllabus to send out to her whole, whoever's in the department several years ago, because it's such a complete one. It leaves nothing unturned, like most syllabi today.
So if someone wanted to join the academy now, what advice would you have for them before they applied? And then once they got in, how should you prepare for just the rigors of being pushed that hard?
In our class or on the fire department?
For the fire department.
Well, they should be physically fit, mentally alert, and resourceful. To be physically fit, you have to be able to, when you go on the fire department, you don't immediately do medical. You have to go through the fire academy and you have to do ladders and knots and KNOTS, learn how to tie knots. But particularly, you have to be able to be physically fit in lifting things. So women sometimes have upper body strength. So we recommend that they start working out, join a gym, and gain their body strength, because we have some fabulous women on the fire department. Some of them have made it all the way up to deputy chief, which is right under the chief. So women are doing a fabulous job. I remember when there were no women on the fire department when I started in 70, nothing, all men, male dominated. And that changed dramatically in the next 10 years. We had our problems on the fire department, restrooms, how do you fix that? Being courtesy at all times, coming into a male dominated world was difficult on many women and they didn't like it. And many of them left the service because of it. But that stuff has been straightened out. And through the efforts of a lot of people, everybody is welcome. If you can do the job and you can build your body strength up, men too, I'm not talking just women. If men have upper body strength, they're going to have problems in the academy because they have to be able to lift ladders and things. It's not easy. And then there's the didactic portion. If they think the EMT course is tough, when you get into a fire academy or a police academy for that matter, it is strict business. In fact, in our classes, we operate it, it's not a military operation, but they have to raise their hand and ask questions. There's no discussing things other than what is in class. We're not in there to discuss politics. We're not in there to discuss personal stuff. They can always talk to the instructor on personal stuff quietly alone for security and all that. But students need to follow all of our rules, be respectful of everybody, and dedicate themselves 100% to learning the material. And that's what we're there to help them do.
So are firefighter cadets, are they investigated to the same degree that the police academy does?
Yes, they have a rigorous background. In fact, I will tell you, EMTs now have a background they have to go through. This has been going on for about 10 years. And I, on the police department, I used to actually do background investigations, not personally, but with a team of people. And a lot of people think you can fool a background investigator. Don't believe it. They look not only at social media for people at parties and for drug stuff and everything, but they have a significant background. It used to be that that police department, if you struck one of them while they were doing their duty and responsibilities as an officer, it's a felony. Well, now fire department and EMTs, while doing their job duties and responsibilities, it is now a felony to interfere with them. That's how serious the law got, because EMTs are unarmed and they're there to help people, not to fight anyone. They're there to render emergency medical care to the sick and injured and to take care of whatever needs to be done. And they don't have time for people that want to fight and call them out, and their job's to call the police, and because people sometimes get shot and we have to respond to it. And sometimes the shooter doesn't want that person to be helped. And that has happened all too many times.
So Al, let me ask this. So I know one thing is that if you lie or cheat and it's documented, you're out.
You're done.
So one thing I always tell my students is never cheat in school on anything. Get an F. Don't cheat, because that's what kills you with the military or any of the fire or police academies. But let's say you smoke pot in high school.
Okay. Well, you know, it depends. If it's more, usually it's 3 to 5 years. If you smoke pot in high school, I mean, everybody smokes pot in today's world. Sometimes I think I'm the only one that doesn't, but I don't smoke at all. So there you go. Any marijuana in the bloodstream, by the way, every private ambulance company will drug test every student we have. And some of those that I wondered about myself got jobs. They came out clean. They said they were clean and I believed them. But I can tell you that the backgrounds are significant. They're done by the police department most of the time. And the fire department has the police department doing them. And EMTs are done also by the Department of Health Services. So they're looking for things like drugs, any sexual misconduct, anyone's on a list for predator or anything like that. You're not supposed to have any convictions of any felonies. They want a clean record. And I tell people the first day of class, if you do smoke or take any kind of drugs, stop it now, because if you stop it and you are clean, you will get a job. I don't know if you, if the viewers or people that listen to this, but even the LA Fire Department has an agreement with the union, and this is the fire department, that you're not allowed to smoke once you're hired by the fire department for the rest of your life until you retire, because smoke can interfere with lungs, and you're going to fires where products of combustion, you're breathing them, and they don't want anybody that has smoking to interfere with breathing. And so they had an agreement with the union that, and the fire and the city agreed, no one can smoke when they're on the fire department. That's been in effect for about 15 to 20 years.
Now, it's been told to me, now I just want to confirm whether it's true or false, that if you were a person who used to drink when you were in high school, or let's say smoke pot in high school, the important thing in the interview is to admit it. So once you stop, right? The thing that gets you not hired is lying, because they will find out.
Well, they call it falsification or omission. If you falsify something, they will find out, I can promise you. And if you omit something by not putting it down that you should have put down, that will cook your goose right on the spot. I mean, you're done. So you're correct. Tell the truth. And I tell students this all the time. If you, let's say you stole something from a market when you were 14 years old. Admit it. There's no problem. It's a long time ago, and look what you've done since then. And that's a misdemeanor anyway. It's not a felony. So those are the kind of things that, you know, if you smoke dope in, if you smoke marijuana in high school, or even if you smoked it 5 years ago, that's fine. Admit it. They're very lenient on when you tell the truth. It's when you, if they don't believe you, they'll give you a poly. They'll polygraph you. And if you have any falsifications or readings that indicate that you are not telling the truth, that's a problem.
Yeah, I have a friend whose job is to do these background investigations for the police. And he said they spend $20,000 on it. It's expensive. Like, they go and they'll talk to your high school teacher. They'll talk to your friends. They'll talk to their relatives. So, you know, don't lie.
Yeah, they'll talk to your neighbors, and they'll check you so many different ways. It's almost like a tree branch with leaves and branches. I don't want to go into detail, but the way they do it, you cannot beat that system. It's, if you think you can, you're not thinking right, because they will. And some people think if something was sealed up by a judge, they can't go into it. Guess what? When you go on for any first responder, police, fire, EMT, you sign releases so they can get into all that stuff. And if you don't sign the release, you won't, they're not going to take you. So you give up your, you sort of give up your rights to stuff that's been done in the past. But as long as you tell the truth, most times you will be fine. The truth is never hurts you in the end.
Wow, Al, this has been an amazing story.
Yeah.
It's just been a wealth of information.
Truly has, Al. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your afternoon to share with us. And I mean, you had such an incredible journey, and it seemed as though you were right in the beginning of a lot of really important changes in the way that emergency services were provided throughout the city. You did note there in passing that you have a book that's coming out. Before we wrap up here, is there any details or anything you can share about that?
Sure. I didn't know you would ask. The book is called, again, it's actually Paramedic Chief, and then a second title, Extraordinary Experiences from the Streets of Los Angeles. This week, I actually will meet with the publisher. It's 464 pages, but I'm sure when they get done chopping it a little bit, it's going to be in the 300s. And there's lots of pictures. Some are not, you know, you need parental permission to see them. They're gory. Some of them are very gory, but it's the experiences of a chief of a paramedic bureau, and that's me, and that has seen and done it all. And I know why all these students are so excited about wanting to become paramedics and nurses and ph- physician's assistants and respiratory therapists and firefighters. It's exciting, and it's a great career. On behalf of the listeners who will listen to this in the future, I want to thank both of you. And I can only tell you that you have done an exceedingly excellent job. I listened to a few of the other things that that Scott and John have done, and you've done an exceptional job in interviewing and really getting to the bottom of what students need to know in order to be successful. And that's what all of us are there for, to make successful students. So thank you on behalf of them and myself for doing an excellent job.
Oh, thanks for your kind words, Al. And if students want to contact you, what's the best way to contact you?
I'll give you my email at the college, and they can call me there. It's Cowen, A-R, at lavc.edu. That's C-O-W-E-N-A-R at lavc.edu. And our number at the office, at the emergency services office, is 818-947-2982. This will certainly give people an impetus to seek the likelihood of coming into one of our classes. I can tell you now, our classes for fall are both full with waiting lists already. So they probably won't be able to get in, but maybe the spring in February of 2022.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Al.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cowen.
Thank you both. Be well. Stay healthy.